Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to AST Radio. This is your host, Arden Franklin, here, and today's show is a very special show. Previewing the NFL draft today. And, of course, we're doing it on a different day. It's Tuesday. We usually do AST Radio on Wednesday. But we got to do it on Tuesday because I have a special guest coming on the show. Guest host for today, my dude, Connor Rogers, is hosting for the second year in a row the NFL Draft Special with yours truly. And we have a lot to discuss over this next half an hour, man. And we got to change it up, you know. That's the one thing I've been trying to do with the shows is just switch it up in terms of topics, man. Not just talk about, well, this player going to this team or this team doing this and that. We're going to talk about some things, man. Of course, when it comes to the NFL draft and draft season, there's always a lot of talk about who's climbing up the draft boards or who's falling. We got to talk about that. We also got to talk about some latest news that's been popping up from last night and this morning and the first round. And speaking of the first round, speaking of any round, man, please do your boy Arden a favor and check out the AST Draft Express big board and mock drafts that I finally finished. My draft season is over with 3.5 months done. It was hard, bro. I'm going to be honest with you. It was hard. I finally got it done. Snap, I was working on the first round for a week. Finished that finally on Sunday. Then later on Sunday, I started the second round. Finished that earlier this morning. Basically, I finished that at 1:45 in the morning, the second round, and I shared it with you guys on Twitter. Remember, you can always follow me on Twitter, at Arden Sports Talk, of course. The Tumblr's in there. I share everything on my Twitter, so please check it out, man. I've just been working hard, man. I've just been working super-duper hard, and this is like the capping off of everything, you know? It's just mock drafts done, you know, big board done, 3 months of just studying. If you're somebody who's trying to be about this draft scouting life, it's hard work, okay? It's hard work, but it's well worth it, and I hope you guys enjoy it. But my guest host, he's in the building. He's ready to talk about the NFL draft with me, my dude, Connor Rogers. If you'd like to follow Connor on Twitter, by the way, please follow him at @CRogers_NFL. My guy writes for Turn on the Jets, one of the best Jets fan sites, and he also does some video work for Bleacher Report. How's everything going with you, bro?
Good, Arden. How you doing, man?
Tired, man. I've just been working so hard with this draft stuff and then work. You know, I ran 1.3 miles this morning. I'm tired, but I'm good to go.
I hear you, man. It's been a long stretch.
Absolutely, man. I'm happy my draft season is coming to an end. How long was your draft season?
It depends. This was the earliest I ever I started, you know, kind of pinpointing needs around July. August, I made, like, you know, a pre-draft list of players just to keep an eye on, and I'm a big college football fan, so kind of easy. They kind of come to you. You guys stand out each week. But I started going back and rewatching film probably in late October, middle of October. I was, you know, rewatching guys, not just the games.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Connor is one of those draft scouts, draft analysts who's really about it. You see me talking about I'm tired from starting in mid-January. Connor's been doing this since last summer and still going strong, man. But, of course, man, draft season, I feel like the more I've been getting into it from a standpoint of actually studying guys and seeing what's going on and going through workouts, it really seems as if draft season is really becoming more of a spectacle each year, and I felt like it was the case again this year. What stood out to you this draft season?
Well, just almost the congestion of the market. I mean, you go on Twitter nowadays, and you have just a community on Twitter of so many people voicing their opinions. Obviously, some stand out, and people that are just writing a ton. I noticed this season more than any was like the season of metrics. I think a lot of people are starting to put together these guys' athletic testing and numbers and trying to get an end result. And I'm personally not the biggest fan of that. I think it's a good piece to use. It's a really good tool. I always say the same thing about PFF. You know, use its statistics, stats and metrics as a tool, but you can't use it as the final outcome. And I think a lot of people are trying to do that now with these guys. And you know, one day there will be a formula where you look at a guy and you go, well, that's what it takes to succeed. He's got the length, he's got the speed, he's got the short, you know, lateral ability and agility. But at the end of the day, you got to turn on the tape and, you know, start there and finish there and, you know, use things like that in between.
Truth be told, man, I really just believe that I think there's an official formula out there, but I just think it starts with everybody. So I know for me personally, of course, I look at a guy's numbers, the stats on the field, and I look at the test numbers and stuff. But I just think it's a balance. I think it needs to be a balance between what you're seeing on the tape and what you're seeing with the numbers. But if I have to give an edge, I will always give the edge to the tape because, to me, the tape doesn't lie. Numbers lie, especially when you got to think about the context. And there's so many things, especially in college football, and you can confirm this because you're a big college football fan. I'm not. You know, I just get into it for the draft. You know that when it comes to competition, regardless if it's individual or teams, everybody goes, well, this team only played this team, or they didn't play this and that. So I just feel like it comes down to a lot of balance. You know, you just have to have balance between the numbers and the tape.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. And that's what it comes down to is finding that balance. And each year you learn something new. I mean, I'm 23 years old now. I've been doing this since I was a little kid watching these games with my dad, but I didn't really understand the process until I was probably about 20 years old, you know, I've grown each year from it, and I still make mistakes and learn from them every year. I mean, it's just the hardest thing is evaluating, obviously, quarterbacks, the most important position, and sometimes you just have to be a little more stern. When you think a guy doesn't have it, you have to say that. You can't always look for things and say, hey, you know, maybe this guy stands a chance because he does this well, but if he doesn't do, you know, three other things well, like handling pressure and just commanding the field and vision, you have to voice your opinion because at the end of the day, a lot of these guys don't make it, and that's the hard part. I think making it in this business is being stern enough to say, hey, I don't think this guy has it, and you're going to take a lot of heat because he's going to have a lot of supporters out there that, you know, think he does, and at the end of the day, you got to hold strong.
Hey, I'm happy you brought that up because I think for me, the one thing that I'm really – working on, and I feel like in a way I solved it, was not being influenced by others' mock drafts and opinions. Not necessarily on my work, but there are certain guys that when I watched them, not saying I thought they were bad, but I just didn't think as highly of them. So think of it like, for example, what's the name, like Bud Dupree, right? So when I was watching him, I watched about three games of him. I was like, I'm like, God can play solid, you know, player athleticism. Cool. I think he's a second to third round guy. All of a sudden, I'm seeing people go, oh, he's first round and he's going to climb up. And I'm like, yo, where does this come from? I'm like, am I wrong for thinking this? And I was just like, you know what? Maybe I just need to reevaluate him myself. And if I feel that way, then I'm going to go along with it. So I could definitely understand where you're coming from. But like, that's the thing that I'm working on all the time when it comes to this type of stuff.
100%. And you look at guys like that, and I was the same way, and I'm one of Bud's bigger fans in this draft class. But at first, you know, I got tipped off to him about him about early September, so I had a good head start. But, you know, you're watching him, and I didn't see the flash. And you always want to see the flash with a pass rusher. So then you go back. Obviously, his athletic testing was through the roof. Tape was pretty good. Not, you know, nothing super, nothing screamed superstar. Fortunately, I know somebody that got to cover him a little bit out there. You know, knows him personally and knows what the coaching staff does. The guy's been moved around a lot. He plays at different weights. I think at the NFL level, it should be, you know, they should work on his pass rushing, but let him do it more. He was asked to do a lot at Kentucky because they needed him to. He dropped back in coverage a lot and did really well with it. You know, he was an edge setter, taking on double teams to seal the edge versus the run. He wasn't like a Vic Beasley where you put him outside on the five tech or the wide nine and, you know, you're like, hey, go get the quarterback. You know, it's you versus the tackle from the elephant or Leo position. So, yeah, it's hard, but you got to always do your, like, a lot of background work when you do see that and say, hey, why are guys calling this guy a first-rounder? And, you know, sometimes it's good to stick to your guns and say he's just not. But, you know, at the end of the day, it takes a lot of work to really get a final grade.
Absolutely. We both could agree there. You know, speaking of Bud Dupree, he's a part of a draft class at that position. You know, when you're talking pass rushers, or if you want to classify him as outside linebacker or defensive, and there's a lot of guys being labeled at different positions, but what position, in your opinion, is the best this year in the draft?
Well, it's probably the position that holds the smallest value, but I would say running back. When you look at this class, I've been telling people, I think there's 10 to 12 guys that could step in and see significant, or at least, you know, have a role or be in a running back rotation in the NFL as rookies next year, which is incredible. It's really rare to take a position group and say, hey, this many guys are going to see the field as rookies, and some of them will hold prominent roles, you know, especially in an NFL backfield where you have to know the offense. Unless you're going to be in a power run offense where you're really just running between the tackles, you're not asked to pass block a lot, but the NFL is getting away from that. You have a lot of spread offenses. These guys have to know how to pass protect. They have to know where to be to pick up. They have to know the quarterback checks. It takes a lot, and you have to have good hands because you have to be a threat out of the backfield, or they know you're just going to sit back there and block. But this running back class has a lot of intelligent players, a lot of big running backs, which the league is obviously looking for. They want guys that are on the field all three downs, but there's some big guys that can catch the ball. I mean, you look at Jay Ajayi out of Boise State. He's done it all. There's some questions about the knee. T.J. Yeldon out of Alabama, another guy. You know, David Johnson from Northern Iowa. A lot of these three-down runners, and even a Duke Johnson, who, yeah, he's a little smaller, but he can run between the tackles. He could definitely catch the ball in the backfield and definitely become that three-down back. There's just so many of these players in this draft, and I do think from pick maybe even 14 on, you know, with Miami maybe taking a running back early, all the way through like 75, you could see a ton of running backs come off the board.
I'm happy that you said running back because, you know, even though I don't think that's the best position, I think it's really up there because I'm going to be honest here, Connor, into the audience, Trent Richardson has messed up the value of running backs. I can say that, okay? I had to watch him 2 freaking years in Indianapolis. The man has really, but for real, yo, he's really put a bad name to running back. Because now everybody and their mom is scared about drafting a running back at any spot in the first round. So that's just something I have to say about that. And two, the position I really like this year, I think that's the best. Typical answer, but I really like wide receiver. I'm a wide receiver guy. You know, I'm a quarterback and wide receiver guy, but wide receivers, to me, this year's the best class. I love this group. Man, my favorite receiver in general, even though I know he has the off-the-field issues, is Daryl Green. Beckham, that's my guy. You know, I feel like Rashad Green on the next level, if he's on a winning team, is going to be a stellar player. Because I just feel like he has that type of game and that type of intelligence. But, and, of course, you got the regular guys, man. Of course, you got Kevin White, and you got Amari Cooper, and Tyler Lockett, and the rest of those guys. But one player I actually just wanted to ask you about real quickly because, again, this is another player, well, to me, he's like my Bud Dupree of the receivers because, again, I watched him at first. I was like, he's solid. I've seen some things. Is Nelson Aguilar, if I pronounced his name right, from USC. What is up with the love affair with this guy all of a sudden?
Yeah, and Aguilar is an interesting guy because I've been really high on him for a while, but you kind of know what he is, and that's not a Kevin White-type ceiling, or even Amari, not as ready as Amari Cooper, but, you know, when you look at guys that are ready to step in and be on the field right away and just smart players, he fits the bill. And most importantly, the teams love his hands. The guy catches everything, and, you know, he's kind of that same type of Amari Cooper where the separation and short area quickness to separate and catches everything kind of ability. Teams love that, and he's been shooting up the draft boards. I'm not buying that he's going to the Eagles at 20. I still think he's kind of in that 30 to 45 range just because I don't think he has the big playability at the next level. You know, I mean, I think he ran a 4.42 area at the combine. He's got decent speed, but when you watch it on tape, the on-field speed, he's not really going to take the top off of a defense constantly, but he could be a guy that can catch 6 to 8 balls a game, you know, 100 yards, really great hands, just so quick off the line. You watch him break into his routes, and it's really impressive, and he will contribute right away, and I think that's what teams really love with him.
What's crazy about him is when I finished studying him, all I could kept thinking in my mind was, no better than, like, maybe a third to fourth string receiver who can really contribute to the return game. I just kept thinking of Jacoby Jones when I was watching him. I'm going to be completely honest. For some reason, I just kept thinking Jacoby Jones was watching this guy play. But I do have him going to the Eagles, though, because he is a very, you know, he has a lot of skills. He can do a lot of things. He's very versatile. That's the word. So I got him going to the Eagles in the second round of 52nd.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised. The one thing with Chip is, he, you know, He takes who he wants when he wants. It doesn't really, he doesn't look at value as the same way as the NFL, the rest of the NFL technically does. You know, we've heard that he would have taken Jordan Matthews in the first round last year. That's how much he liked him. You know, who knows with Aguilar? Maybe he does go, you know, 52nd overall, or maybe he goes 20th overall. That's the thing with the draft. You never really know how these teams value these guys. It is really interesting. You know, back to what we were saying about Trent Richardson, you know, kind of ruining the running back position, essentially, as taking the top 10 of the draft. The problem is, now there's a track record when you look at these guys. You know, just taking a running back in the top 10, what are you exactly getting? It's obviously just, it's just so risky. You know, I mean, you see these guys going early. Even Reggie Bush didn't live up to the hype. But there's been tons of guys like that. Cedric Benson, you know, it goes on and on and on. And, I mean, the list is just crazy. I don't think the value is there, especially with a guy like Gurley coming off the knee. It's just too risky. I can't take a running back in the first round like that. I mean, the one guy that I might consider is Melvin Gordon, just because he's explosive around the outside. He's a big guy. Can really hold up, and I think you really like to see that. But, I mean, I'm not talking top 15. I'm saying the back end of the draft.
Hey, man, can't blame you for there. But let's talk about a team that's close to your heart, those New York Jets. And before we go into this question, I'm pretty sure you heard – not heard, but you saw the tweet from Adam Schefter about two teams approaching the Jets about a trade for Mo Wilkerson. You heard about that?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think of that? What do you think about two teams, you know, approaching the Jets about Mo? You think they're really willing to give up a lot for him? Because it will have to take a lot.
Yeah, it would take a lot. And people don't understand that, I don't think. I think they see the contract talks and they think, hey, the Jets don't have leverage. Well, no, that's just not true, because the Jets can control this guy not only this year, but they could use the franchise tag over the next 2 years on him, and they will. So it comes down to the fact that I think they'd have to be blown away. I do think that Todd Bowles really likes Quentin Coples, and when Quentin Coples filled in for Mo Wilkerson while he was injured last year, the drop-off in the defense was not astronomical. So when you look at it, you say, hey, you know, what can we get back? But the bottom line is, I think it was two teams calling the Jets. I don't think the Jets really are putting him out there or floating his name around on the block. I obviously think they view him as one of their franchise players, one of their cornerstones. And the one thing is, Mike Maccagnan all along has said, you know, we're going to talk Mo's contract after the draft. If you know Maccagnan, everything is the draft right until it's
during
over.
His
this
time,
guy, it's
during his time,
all
he's
he
remember.
Does. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think Mo's available. I think they'd have to be blown away to even consider a deal.
All I got, I have a name for you. It's unlikely, but I have one name for you, Connor, and just Twitter. Ryan Grigson. I'm just saying, a man is not afraid to pull the trigger. It's very unlikely, but you never know. But let's go ahead and talk about the Jets' plans at six. Because truth is, when I was doing my mock draft, let me tell you something. Out of all the teams, out of all 64 picks, the Jets pick was the hardest for me to make. Because the amount of options that you guys have, the directions you guys can go in, is absolutely absurd. So with that being said, what should the Jets do, Connor, at number six? You are on the clock.
Yeah, well, I think you got to assess how the board breaks, obviously. If you have an edge, they need an edge player desperately. When you have Calvin Pace and, you know, Jason Babin, probably your starters on the outside, because I do think Coples is going to be playing a line, you got to get younger. You got to find somebody that can step in, you know, maybe be that three-down outside linebacker type. And, plan A is Dante Fowler. This is a guy from Florida that's just, he's a stud. He's a power player. You know, he needs to refine his pass rush. Gets a little too busy with his hands, but those things come. He has the size. I think he has the length. You know, some people say he doesn't really have the bend to get around the edge, but the bottom line is he's an edge stealer, an intimidator out there, can lead the front of a defense and just brings a lot of youth. And, you know, he does bring pass rush ability, and he'd be on the field for three downs. So that's who you want at six. If he's not there, you know, the next kind of option, at least at that edge position, is Bud Dupree, because a lot of people are saying, hey, what about Vic Beasley or Shane Ray? And the bottom line is, these guys don't really have the size that Bowles is looking for on the edge. If you've ever seen Bowles' defense, you know, I just don't think they're going to be looking for that finesse pass rusher. I'd be really shocked if they went that route. So you look at a three-down guy like Bud Dupree that can do a lot of things. He can cover, he can rush the passer, he seals their edge rush run, like I said, against even double teams at times. But also a trade-down is probably really plan B. If you're talking about Fowler being off the board, I mean, Dupree might be into consideration. If both are off the board, I would almost guarantee a trade-down if they get the right offer. I'm not buying that they're taking Amari Cooper or Leonard Williams. I think if either of those guys are there at six, there's going to be teams calling the Jets, and the Jets are going to take the offer because McCagnan wants more picks. That's how draft guys operate. You know, they want to accumulate what they call lotto tickets or stocks eventually, and, you know, they really want that. So I definitely see a trade down as a big potential.
For me, personally, when I was looking at the Jets, and truth is, I think the biggest reason why I didn't go defense in my mock and I went with Andreas Pete, the offensive tackle from Stanford at 6, is because I was just thinking, I'm like, all right, can the Jets use a pass rusher here that could be, you know, an impact player right away? Yes. But at the same time, will they be fine without one? Yes, because of how improved their defense is, along with Todd Bowles, who's a very creative coach. What it just came down to me is this. If the Jets really feel as if they're fine with Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, then the least they can do is get those guys some protection. And you watch the Jets very closely. The offensive line, outside of one or two guys, in my opinion, was atrocious last year. It was terrible to watch at times. So I feel like if you're the Jets and those two guys are your option at quarterback and you're not in the Mariota sweepstakes or any of these guys, I think the least the Jets can do is get these guys protection. And I really like Andreas Pete. He's the number one tackle on my board. Or if they get Sharif, that's still fine with me. But I just think another two is at the linebacker spot, I feel like in terms of pass rushers, there's guys who they can get early day two. You know, I think I forgot the guy's name, Kia from Washington, pass rusher. I got him going to the Jets around too. I just feel like there's still enough depth if there isn't a run on pass rushers that the Jets could address that position on days two and three. I just don't feel that way when it comes to offensive tackle.
No, and I totally understand. I mean, I've been an advocate for line for quite some time. Back in October, I saw Lyle Collins for LSU, and I said right away, this is what the Jets need. This is a guy that could really play any position along the line, it looks like. He's a tackle. And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, I like him at guard. Well, yeah, he could start out at guard. And here's the thing that you got to know with the Jets when it comes to offensive line. You know, Giacomini at right tackle was not good last year. The Jets don't have a blocking tight end to help him chip away these elite pass rushers. He was kind of on his own a lot, which is a huge problem. They did bring in a blocking tight end this year. But they're, you know, out of the spread offense, you're not going to be looking to have these guys on the field for more than 10, 12 snaps a game. So Giacomini's going to be on his own again, except with the help of, you know, a pass-protecting running back. But it's a liability on the right side. The Brickashaw Ferguson has seen a decline. He's not a top five left tackle anymore. It's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, you know, the Jets could save a lot of money by cutting him after this season. I believe he's due for about $14 million. You know, the cap hit would not be that, the dead money would not be that big. So this is what you're looking for right now. If you can get that offensive lineman that can start out at guard or right tackle this year and eventually swing over to the left side, that's the ideal plan for the Jets. Now, the guys that are in this draft that you would probably start out at the right side this year and take Giacomini, or at least have a chance to take Giacomini's starting spot, you look at T.J. Clemmings from Pittsburgh. This is a guy that might be there at 37 for them if they choose not to go in the first round, like you said, with an Andres Pete. I don't really see Brandon Scherff as a tackle in the at the next level. Maybe he could play the right side. I'm not fully convinced. I see him as a really, really high-level guard, which, in my opinion, is not worth a top-10 pick. Like I said, I've been pushing for Lyle Collins for quite some time. No idea where he goes. I've seen anywhere from the top 10 all the way down to like 25, so that's really crazy.
Yeah.
But like we said, if the Jets trade out, yeah, you're 100% right. Offensive line is completely in play because it's a liability right now.
I actually have, you know, so funny you said about Sharif, about not sure if he's a tackle or a guard. I feel that way about Collins, man. Like when I was watching him, I'm like, yo, this guy, he's good at tackle, but I was just imagining him as a guard. I'm like, yo, he could do something because he pushes guys off the line. In the tape I watched a couple games, one of them against Bama, he was pushing guys from the line, redirecting. And I actually have, where do I have him? I'm looking at my mock right now. I have Collins to Carolina in the first round. I have him 25 to Carolina in the first round. My boy Cam needs help.
No, you're 100% right. And you nailed it. He's a drive blocker. He's a guy that if you do put him at guard, you keep things simple and you get him moving downfield. He's somebody that could literally take out three guys on one play, which is – he was the most fun offensive line to watch this year in the draft class. And that's why some people really gravitated to him. And then other people are like have concerns about his lateral ability, his footwork off the edge, a tackle. I do see it as his long-term position. But if you start him out at guard, you're 100% right. You're getting a good player to help right away. And when you look at Carolina – that's probably his area of landing spot in the first round, and a team that, man, do they need offensive line help, I mean, in the worst way. Michael Orr, you know, replacing Byron Bell is an even swap, and it's a swap of two not very good players right now.
And let's go ahead, man, before we end this show for the last few minutes, let's go ahead and talk about certain teams in the first round in terms of how the first round will play out. You know, I'm pretty sure your choice for the number one overall pick is going to be the same as mine. So let's go ahead and start with the number one overall pick with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who will they select?
Yeah, I do think at the end of the day they will take Winston, although it's, you know, it's very scary, man. You read the reports of everything that's gone on down at Florida State. I mean, listen, I'm a huge Jameis Winston fan as the football player. I've liked him as the number one quarterback in this class since the talk even started. I've never been fully sold on Marcus Mariota, but you need the guy to be on the field, and you got to keep him out of trouble, and it's definitely concerning. But at the end of the day, I do think, you know, the coaching staff down there probably wants him, and they see him as a franchise quarterback if he could stay out of trouble, and I think he's the number one pick.
Let's go ahead with number two, because this whole number two pick thing with Tennessee is confusing to me. First, is they going to trade it for Rivers? Then they're going to go with Mariota? Then I thought they smartened up and they were going to go with Leonard Williams. Now I'm hearing that the Titans are possibly thinking about passing on Williams. And I tweeted this yesterday, and I'll say it again. I'm laughing at every team that passes on Leonard Williams. So what do you think the Titans are going to do at number two?
Yeah, it's getting pretty crazy. I mean, I definitely think at the end of the day they're not passing on Mariota. I know people have said all along that, listen, they're auctioning off the pick. Don't get me wrong. They're asking a lot. And a lot of teams right now, obviously like the Browns, just aren't willing to give up what they're asking for. But if it comes down to where they're on the clock and they don't take any offers from any teams, I do think they're going to take Mariota. At the end of the day, you could still use him as a trade chip, and some team will want him. You know, you're going to get some kind of package somewhere. He's not a Ken Whisenhunt quarterback. That's the biggest problem here. As crazy as it sounds, Whisenhunt, who's a guy that has about three wins over the last, you know, two seasons or whatever, it's not looking good. But I do think Mariota will be the pick, and I think you're right. It is kind of crazy to pass over somebody that I think will be a defensive, you know, franchise cornerstone along your defensive line in a spot that, yeah, they could probably use help. They need to accumulate talent. It's a huge risk in taking Mariota, a quarterback that I don't really think the coaching staff even wants, but I do think he'll be the pick if they don't auction it off.
All I know is they pick Mariota. There's one name attached to that pick, and there's only one reason why. My dude, Andrew Luck. Nobody can tell me anything different. But let's go. I got a few more to talk about. First receiver taken in the first round. Who you going with, Cooper or White?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Cooper. I think NFL teams see, you know, a number one wide receiver that's ready to step in and probably, you know, contribute like a number one wide receiver like a lot of the guys did last year, like Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr. You know, Sammy Watkins had a good season with a bad quarterback, and that's what it comes down to when he's healthy. Great player. So I do think it's Cooper. It wouldn't shock me if Jacksonville takes him at three. I know they wanted a big-time wide receiver, you know, well before free agency started. They have a nice little core there. I don't think they have a big-time guy. And, you know, they kind of reached on Blake Bortles last year. I think, you know, Cooper at three, I'm not a fan of taking a wide receiver top five, but it wouldn't shock me. Down to, does Oakland take him four, or do they take Leonard Williams? That'll get really interesting, but I do think Cooper's going to go top 10. I think if he, you know, even gets the six of the Jets, I think a team will move up for him.
First pass rusher off the board.
Yeah, it should be Dante Fowler Jr. Vic Beasley's a perfect fit for Jacksonville. I really like him there. I just don't expect them to take him. At the end of the day, I do think it'll be Dante Fowler, whether it is Jacksonville, maybe it's the Redskins. Maybe it's the Jets. You know, we'll see. But I do think he's the guy.
Connor, thank you once again, man, for hosting this special with me. Always good talking to you. Ladies and gentlemen, please make sure you follow my guy on Twitter, @SteveRogers_NFL. If you want to talk about some good, high-quality work, Connor Rogers does that. And most importantly, I'm happy to call him my friend. Connor, thank you once again, man. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the draft.
Yeah, Oren, thanks for having me, man. It's always fun. We'll have to do this every year.
Absolutely, man. Talk to you soon. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the AST NFL Draft Preview Special featuring Connor Rogers. I really appreciate you if you listen. Enjoy the draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. Remember, follow me on Twitter. I will be tweeting throughout the draft. Check out my Tumblr page in which I will have my mock drafts up. They're already up. check out everything, man. I'll see you guys next week. New episode of the Snatchback Podcast will be available. Peace out.